Welcome to the Pachanga and Possibility Podcast, the podcast where we celebrate the power of healing and transformation. I am your host, Natalie Calzadilla. Each week, I'll be interviewing experts that will inspire you to discover your soul's purpose and create a fulfilling life. I'll also be sharing spiritual coaching and personal adventures as I enter this new phase in my life as a mother and entrepreneur. Grab your cafecito and a notebook. Let's get started. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Pachanga and Possibility. Today we are talking about crystal skulls. Now, I don't know if you've been to a metaphysical store and seen on the shelf, along with all the beautiful crystals, are some crystal skulls that are part of the landscape. And they actually are more than just little crystal skulls, little heads for decoration. They have a lot of mystery and magic behind them. And I have invited on today's show Stephanie Phelps, who is a crystal skull guardian. And you are going to really enjoy this episode because we talked about the Native American legend of the crystal skulls, where they come from, what they're made out of, if they come from the sky people, if they were come from the earth. We talk about the famous Mitchell Hedges skull. We talked about all of the paranormal activity that some of the paranormal activity that she's experienced with crystal skulls, as well as instantaneous healings that have taken place in the presence of crystal skulls, why these things sometimes disappear. She has a great story about that also, and what's going to happen, possibly one of the myths that what happens when all 13 skulls come together and what that means for the new consciousness on Earth. Just so many delicious stories. And she talks about her own awakening journey that was also really magical and can really be turned into a movie, I feel. So Stephanie Phelps is the founder of White Horse Journeys. She is an intuitive spiritual guide and ceremonialist who is deeply connected to earth wisdom, teaching through the path of the heart and the medicine way. She is recognized for her passion and inspiration in bridging heaven and earth through ceremonies, workshops, and sacred travel. A sought-after shamanic healer, Stephanie has traveled the world as both student and teacher of many indigenous cultures, customs, and beliefs, including the Quero shaman lineage of Andean energy medicine and North American healing arts. She has been initiated, trained, and blessed by tribal elders, shamans, grandmother wisdom keepers, and continues to learn and share this wisdom and knowledge with all who seek the mysteries of the heart and soul. She is recognized for her passion and inspiration. She inspires the art of transformation as an empath, intuitive, spiritual guide, shamanka healer, earth wisdom teacher, ceremonialist, Peruvian entheosonic whistle keeper, cacao alchemist, crystal skull guardian, shamanic artist, medicine wheel keeper, people weaver, and explorer of sacred sites. Now, without any further ado, here is Stephanie. Welcome, Stephanie, to the show. I am so happy that you are here.
Thank you, Natalie, and thank you for the invitation. I'm really excited to share about the crystal skulls.
We met, and I don't know if you remember me, actually. I went to one. I know you do these crystal skull meditations all the time in Phoenix. And while I was living there in between 2014 and 2016, I attended one of your crystal skull meditations and I got to hold the big pink one that's like 9 pounds.
Yes, I see her.
Part of this. Oh, and it was so amazing to sit and meditate with her on my lap. And I had such a wonderful experience. And it's not common to find crystal skull, I guess, events. And I was attracted to your event because I had here in Miami, they had brought Shana Ra, that crystal skull, to our spiritual center, and Shana Ra made an appearance and we had like a special event with Shana Ra, and we all were able to connect with her, or Well, yeah, for me, it came in as a female energy, but it varied for each person. And then they were doing private sessions with Shanara. And I was just fascinated by this whole crystal skull phenomenon topic. You know, it's just, I feel like a lot of people are creeped out about the skulls, but I think they're really cute and I love collecting them.
Well, you're not alone.
Yeah, so tell us about yourself in your own words and how your journey came into with the skulls.
Well, I want to get back to some of the things you just shared with your audience. Remind me to tell you a little bit about why you are drawn to these crystal skulls. I want to share a little bit about myself, but I want to preface that with saying that we're all on a spiritual journey, and some of us wake up and some of us are asleep. And when that wake-up call comes, it can be as gentle as a tap on the shoulder or a thump on the head. And I had my wake-up call after I met my future husband, and that was in 1975. And I was on the beach in a place called Encinitas in California. The beach was stone steps. We were surfing. I met this gorgeous-looking, blue-eyed, dark-haired young man. And we started talking and knew each other for about 2 weeks. And then we wrote letters for 5 months, because that's what you had to do back in those days. So when he returned home to Wales, after 5 months of writing letters, he said to me, "Would you like to come over? We'll get a Volkswagen van and surf the coast of France, Spain, and Morocco." So off I went, and we did that. And when we finished in Morocco, I ended up back in Wales. I worked in the local pub called the White Rose in the Mumbles, Swansea, and decided to go to art college. My first year in art college, he asked me to marry him, and we got married. And then in 1986, he was asked to go to Papua New Guinea. And in 1986 is when I got my spiritual wake-up call. And it came as a thump on my head. It came after the birth of our son, and I was introduced to my first teacher. And that's when I started working on healing the wounds of the past. In Papua New Guinea, we were there for 2 years. And then from Papua New Guinea, we moved to Seattle, Washington for 9 years, and then down to Arizona. And when we arrived in Arizona, that's when my spiritual journey took off. I'd spent all those previous years working on myself. And I think that that's a big part of the spiritual journey. And I arrived at a place where I felt that my life was beginning to shift and change. And it began with moving to Arizona with the Tibetan medicine woman that I had met. And I was invited to go on a sacred sites tour of Arizona. I did that. And I was invited to go to a sweat lodge with her and this group. It was the first sweat lodge I'd ever attended. I was worried about it. I was petrified. I was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, what is a sweat lodge? And will I be able to get out? Will I have claustrophobia? Will it be too hot? It just brought up every single fear that I could think of and I felt in my body. When I went to the sweat lodge, it was attended by Yaqui Native Americans. So they had been fasting for their upcoming Sundance, and the sweat lodge was part of their preparation. We all went into the lodge, and when it started with the drums and the smell of sage and sweet grass and tobacco and the songs, it was just transporting me home. And I knew right then my life was going to be different. And on that night, with the Yaqui Indians, they do their sweat lodge in 3 rounds instead of 4. So most of them, because they had been fasting, left the sweat lodge. And I sat there with some Native elders, and we prayed together in the lodge. And they asked me many questions, and they told me my life was about to change. And it was the very next day, Natalie, that I went to my altar. And on my altar, I always travel with an altar. I always set up a small altar when I travel. And I picked up a stone and I looked at it. I was holding it in my hand and it shapeshifted. And it showed me its spirit. And the spirit of the stone, it kind of was like a holograph that came out of the stone and went back in. And I questioned if I had actually seen what I saw. And I did it again. And pun intended, it rocked my world.
And you saw this with your eyes open or with your mind's eye?
With my eyes open in the 3D. And, you know, no drugs, nothing like that. It was just a real experience that happened that I questioned what had happened just then, and it did it again. So what then happened was for a whole year, I had what I would call a full-blown shamanic awakening. Everything was alive. Everything was speaking to me. I could see the energy running through the trees, the clouds, the stones. And I spent a lot of time in nature, a lot of time being quiet. And during that year, what I learned was that all of nature was God waiting to be heard. It's just we have to stop long enough to go within, to hear the silence within, to receive in that way. So that was the beginning of a very extraordinary journey, which resulted in me creating a medicine wheel on our property in North Scottsdale, which at the time was just open desert. I created this medicine wheel with the foundation that it be for healing and transformation. I didn't really have any knowledge of medicine wheels and, you know, what am I going to do with this now? But people started coming and the rocks came from all over the world, from sacred sites from all over the world. People heard my story and they were mailing me rocks. I was going to sacred sites around the world and bringing those rocks home for this medicine wheel. And it was becoming like the United Nations of the Stone People. And so I held ceremony for new moon, full moon, stargate, solstice, you know, all the celestial happenings, equinox, whatever. And that began me down this path that had blown open. And I was asked to channel some information for a book. And it was based off a photograph that a woman, Kathy Doerr, had given me. And she said, what do you get off this photograph? Can you channel any information for me? And I did. And it was used in a book called The Stone Forests of Markawasi. Dr. Robert Schock wrote the introduction for this book. And they used my piece in the book. And Robert Schock asked to meet me. He was going to be speaking in a conference in Scottsdale. So I was gifted a ticket. And that's where my journey in 2008 began with the crystal skulls.
Wow. Okay. So before we jump into the crystal skulls, first of all, that's an amazing story. Like that can be a movie.
that actually has a lot more to it. I've tried to get it in the
I'm sure. Version. I can tell it's still the abridged version.
For another show.
Seriously. But from meeting your husband from Wales and surfing and then moving over there and then art school and then coming back and then awakening instantly, you know, after that sweat lodge. I haven't done a sweat lodge yet because I had the same apprehensions that you had and I can barely survive hot yoga. So I haven't jumped in the sweat lodge bandwagon yet, but I want to. Oh, but how amazing that that's just started. It blew everything open. And Arizona being such a magical place because the 2.5 years I spent there were transformational. Just amazing how everything came together for you. Can you explain to the listeners what a medicine wheel is? And then we'll move into the crystal skulls.
A medicine wheel can be many things. There are the traditional Native American medicine wheels. that are symbolic of the circle of life and the different stages of life. Their meanings are multidimensional, they're layered, and they vary from tribe to tribe. My medicine wheel was a circle of stones. And unbeknownst to me, it became an interdimensional portal. There was a lot of magic that happened within that interdimensional portal, which is a talk for another time. But Chief Golden Light Eagle, who is known through the Star Knowledge Conferences, came to my medicine wheel to give a blessing to the stone people and my family. And when he saw the medicine wheel, he said to me, "Stephanie, thank you for not copying our ways," because it was not based off Indigenous traditions. It was based off the way Spirit had given me the information. It was kind of interesting because after my experience of having that stone shapeshift in my hand, the stone people, they have a voice and they have consciousness. Their consciousness is different than our consciousness, but it's like going into a room of people where one person you will feel drawn to because they're awake and there's a magnetism between the two of you to come together and have a conversation. When you look at the stones, you're attracted to certain stones. So, like looking at a rockscape, there might be one stone that's awake and has consciousness. And it would call to me to take it. I wasn't sure why it was calling to me, but it became part of that medicine wheel because it said, "Take me." And when I created the medicine wheel, I got up before the sunrise. I laid out on the desert floor. I connected my energy with the mother so that I could feel every cell in my body vibrating. And when I felt that, I could hear the coyotes. And the coyotes came from the south, the west, the north, and the east. And it was a great omen, a time to awaken, a time to know that it was time to create that medicine wheel. Each stone was invited in. The land was cleared with sage and prayer and song and drum. And some stones didn't come into that circle. Some did. Interesting how synchronicities, you know, I call them God kisses because they
weave
our life together, you know, and who would have known that now in 2020 or 2019 and previously, I would be taking people to stone circles in Northern Europe and connecting with all those stone circles where I'm realizing that the stone circle that I created probably was more connected with stone circles in Europe than they are with Indigenous stone circles. So they're circles of power. I know I probably gave you way too much information.
No, I love it. I know with your background, we can probably do 20 episodes. It's going to be really tempting to veer off and do all and get into all these things. And especially, so when you say stone, I resonate deeply with that because I prefer stones over crystals. Even though I love crystal skulls, those are the only crystals that I love. I really can care less about regular, maybe a Lumerian crystal, but that's about it. I connect deeply. I felt more magic with a stone, a regular stone, than anything else. So I love your story and how you made this medicine wheel and you brought in the stone people. In your experience, the stone people are the spirits of the stones. And those are different than the crystal people, I guess that would be, or energies within crystals.
There's a different vibration. It's a different matrix, and they connect in a different way. Rocks and stones are connected to the earth matrix of recording all the history of mankind. It's of the earth, as is crystal. But crystal has a different energetic vibration. And the thing that makes crystal skulls interesting is that not only do crystal skulls hold all the energetic properties of the stone, let's say rose quartz, they hold that loving frequency, that high vibrational love frequency, something magical happens when you take that crystal and you carve it into the skull shape, because all crystals are connected in the etheric crystal grid. And when they're carved into the crystal skull shape, they're connected with the etheric crystal skull grid. And in that grid, you have not only the new and modern skulls, you have the old skulls and the ancient skulls. So, interestingly, when a person is with a modern skull, an old skull, or an ancient skull, they're connected to all skulls. And that's actually why people have these instantaneous healings and awakenings and expanded psychic abilities and visions of past life civilizations, you know, because they're connecting into this grid where all the information is contained.
I see. So let's jump back in your story. Cue the entrance of the crystal skulls into your life.
Okay, so in 2008, I was gifted a ticket to attend this conference. And I didn't know what kind of conference it was going to be. I just knew I was going to be meeting Dr. Robert Schuck, who was often on Ancient Aliens and wrote the introduction to the book. And I was very excited about that.
Is this the guy with the crazy hair?
No, he's the host, Giorgio. No, Dr. Robert Schuck is a geologist who changed the timeline for the pyramids based on the Sphinx and the watermarks on the Sphinx. Basically, that's how he became very well known in the metaphysical world. But he's often featured on Ancient Aliens on a variety of topics. So I turn up to this conference in Scottsdale. It's in a big hotel. I get into the conference room. In the aisle of the conference room is a table with the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull. And a long line of people standing, waiting to have a moment with this crystal skull. I took my seat, and a person I knew, a friend, walked up to me who happened to be there, and she said, "Oh, you know, are you going to get your picture taken with the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull?" And I was like, "No, I'm not into crystal skulls, and I'm not waiting in line, and I don't really care about it." I didn't even know what the Mitchell Hedges was. And then she said, "You know it's the Mitchell Hedges skull." And I said, "Yeah, okay, big deal." Didn't really think too much more about it until Bill Holman, the keeper of the skull, got up and was a speaker at the conference. And that's when I first learned what the Mitchell Hedges skull was and something about, you know, the who, what, why of crystal skulls. I found it interesting, and that was that. Then I went to lunch, and when I came back from lunch, there was not a line of people waiting to have their time with the crystal skull. And my friend came up to me and she said, "Come on, Stephanie, you're getting your picture taken with the crystal skull." So I went over, put my hands either side of it, you couldn't touch it, had my picture taken. And in all honesty, Natalie, it wasn't a big wowie moment. It didn't blow my socks off or anything. It was just like, okay, cool, full stop. Later on that afternoon, it was after dinner, I was watching another presentation on crop circles. I'm a huge croppie. I love crop circles. So I'm looking at slides on the latest crop circles, and I hear or receive a message. I'm clairaudient, and this message came in through that channel, and I heard, "Get up, you're to be with the crystal skull." And in my head, I said to myself, "No, I'm really into these crop circles." And then I heard, "Get up now." So when I get a message like that, I pay attention. I left the conference hall. I started wandering the hallways of this hotel. And I thought, this is absolutely ludicrous. Like, I'm really going to find this crystal skull. What the heck am I doing? And with that, the same friend that had taken my photo earlier turned the corner and came down the hallway, and I said, I just got this crazy message. I'm supposed to be with the Crystal Skull. And she said, well, you came to the right place. They're having private sessions right here at this hotel door. Go in. And I said, no, I can't go in on someone's private session, uninvited, unannounced. And with that, the door opened, Natalie. And someone walked out, and Bill Holman looked at me, and I said, I just got this crazy message I'm to be with, and I didn't even get the words out of my mouth. And he said, come in, we're waiting for you. And there was the Crystal Skull in the center of a card table with three occupied chairs and one vacant chair. And I sat down without going into my whole experience. It was a life-changing moment. And I will tell you that after people have been with Crystal Skulls, and in particular the ancient ones, they often receive instantaneous healings. They receive visions, messages about past civilizations, as I said before, past life memories, and expanded psychic abilities. And I would say, one thing I will say is I know after that experience, my psychic abilities were expanded probably tenfold. And another funny story about that, when I got home that night, because I had so many people coming to my medicine wheel, I had this one lady who was French Canadian, and she would come down as a snowbird and attend my ceremonies. And she painted probably one painting a year that was channeled. And they were large paintings. In fact, that's one that's hanging behind me there. And they had metaphysical imagery with pyramids and owls and eagles and shaman and all this wonderful stuff. And all paintings had 13 crystal skulls painted into them. I chose never to look at the crystal skulls in the paintings. I thought they were weird and creepy. I only wanted to see the beauty of the other imagery in the paintings. And I came home that night I have to say, she gave me five of her paintings to hang in my home to sell for her with the people that were coming and going. She said maybe somebody might be interested in purchasing one. So I was very happy to have all those paintings in my home. And that's when I came home that night after being with the Mitchell Hedges. I sat on the sofa and I was just like, oh my gosh, what has just happened to me? And I looked across the room and I saw all these crystal skulls surrounding me in these paintings. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've been living with them for years.
Waiting for you.
Yeah, it was funny.
So for those that don't know what the Mitchell Hedges skull is, it's one of the more popular ones that has gotten a lot of airtime, and it was discovered in the 1920s in some archaeological site in Mexico, some Mayan ruins. And that one's been taken and to Hewlett Packard for testing to see if it had any markings, if it was man-made or made from something else. And they determined that it had no tool markings whatsoever. And their only answer was that it's been polished, but it would have taken hundreds of years to polish it to what it's at right now. I think that's what I had learned in my research. The Mitchell Hedges skull has just gotten a lot of airtime, but there's 12 other ancient skulls. And then there's all of the ancient versus the new ones. And then you can explain the difference between those two.
Yes. And, you know, it depends who you're speaking to, whether there are 12 ancient skulls or more than that. Some of the Mayans believe there are 52. It depends what tribe you're speaking to as to whether. But in our Western culture, we believe that there are 12 significant ancient crystal skulls. And for your listeners to know that there's only one way to categorize and classify crystal skulls, and it is by the tool marks. So the modern new crystal skulls. There have been hundreds and thousands of them created over the last 100 years, and they're made by modern machines and modern carvers. They can tell that they're modern because they have to take a silicon casting of the surface of the skull and then look at that casting under an electron microscope to see what the tool marks look like. And if they're uniformed marks on the surface, they're modern tools. If they're irregular tool marks on the surface, they're considered primitive tools. And the primitive tools were used on the old skulls. The old crystal skulls range in age anywhere from 100 to 2,000 years old. And they're often found at archaeological digs. Old-fashioned detective work becomes important in researching the myths and the legends of the locals surrounding the crystal skulls, if they have any knowledge of it. Just like when the Mitchell Hedges was found, the natives all went into ceremony, and Mitchell Hedges actually gave the skull to the natives, the local natives there, and they had ceremony with it for the rest of the time that Mitchell Hedges was excavating the Belize Pyramid, that site. And then when he left, the indigenous people gifted him that skull to take home with him. But getting back to the classification, with the old skulls, as you said, there are no tool marks on the ancient skulls. And the ancient skulls are sometimes referred to as original as well. And it does defy all lapidary logic that there aren't any tool marks on these skulls. And the question becomes, how was it made? You know? And that's where we get into all the mystery and magic.
Cue the sky people.
It could be. And there are many legends that it was, you know, could be the sky people. It could be crystallized consciousness. They say that the Atlanteans maybe use crystallized consciousness to create these skulls. Perhaps there was some form of lost technology that they had to create these skulls that we don't have today. But even with these ancient skulls, if they had our latest technology, they can't explain how they were created. Because I started to say they defy lapidary logic. They would have shattered. They were cut against the grain in some cases. There are shafts of light that come up through the crystal skulls that they can't reproduce. It's just kind of interesting.
It's so interesting. And the part that is crazy is that they can't date the skull because you can't carbon date quartz crystal. It has no carbon in it. And so it just stays as a mystery.
That's right. You just can't. It's a mysterious topic. It's an ongoing topic. And that's why our personal experiences and our personal stories become so important. And that's why I've continued to work with them, because they have continued to call me to do this work. Every time I think that maybe I've finished my work with the crystal skulls, I'll get invited to talk on a show or to give a presentation, and they keep calling me to work with them. And I've witnessed the most interesting phenomena, the paranormal, time and time again with the crystal skulls.
So I definitely want to get into the paranormal. So I'm curious, are all the crystal skulls quartz crystal?
No. On the ancient ones, you mean, or in general?
Yeah, as part of the, part of the 12 to 13, are those, is that set of what they consider ancient, are those all the quartz crystal?
No.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, this is a difficult topic because some say, yes, all of the ancient ones are clear quartz crystals, but There are others that have been identified as ancient skulls that have no tool marks that are not clear quartz crystal. The most famous ancient ones that are the Mitchell Hedges. You know, Shana Ra is not clear quartz. Shana Ra is smoky quartz. And that's an ancient one.
Well, I didn't mean clear quartz, sorry. Are they all quartz in general? And then I know there's a variation of rose and
smoky quartz. Yes, uh-huh. So they carry all the characteristics from the stone.
From the quartz crystal. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's fascinating is that the quartz crystals, is this why they're considered like computers and record keepers? Because quartz can actually contain and carry information. That's what's inside of computers and can carry more information than a computer chip.
Absolutely. You think about it. We have been using quartz crystals for our transistor radios, our TVs, our computers, liquid crystal chips. Libraries of information are stored on liquid crystal chips. And the same with these crystal skulls. They are libraries, storehouses of information. The thing is, Natalie, they didn't come with an instruction manual. They didn't come with a button to push and power them up. They are part of a lost technology. And so again, it is up to us and our personal experiences that are showing us how to work with them. I've become more and more aware of the fact that they are interdimensional communicators. And I keep going back and forth. Do I think they came from other planets or did they come from the Earth? That I'm not so sure. I go back and forth on that all the time, but I do know they connect us with our star brothers and sisters.
It's just so amazing. It's such a crazy phenomenon. And what's been some of the healing experiences that you've had with the skull?
I think I'd like to share an experience that came to me. I was offering a fire ceremony for my community, and a woman walked up to me and she said, "My name is Kat Baker. You don't know me, or you might not remember me, but I attended your monthly crystal skull gathering meditation last month. And I came here because I wanted to tell you a story of what happened to me." She had been invited by her friend to my crystal skull meditation, and she said she didn't want to go. She had cut her leg, had an accident earlier in the week, and it was bleeding, and she wanted to avoid having stitches, and she thought she'd just see if it would just kind of take care of itself, and it didn't. It continued to bleed, and she knew that she needed to get those stitches. And her friend said, "Come with me to this crystal skull meditation. And after the meditation, I'll take you to the ER and you can get your leg stitched." And she said, "I thought I'd better go because it had been a week since the accident and my leg just wouldn't stop bleeding. But I really didn't want to come to your meditation, but I did. I'm not interested in crystal skulls." And I sat there with my eyes open during the meditation. And during that meditation, a beam of light, she told me, shot from the center of the circle to her leg and healed her leg. And after the meditation, her leg had stopped bleeding. And the very next day, she said there was no sign of even a scar there. And she said, "I came here tonight because I thought you'd want to know that." That is an instantaneous healing for a firsthand account that happened in one of my crystal skull meditations.
So crystal skulls have the ability to heal? Because sometimes I've heard that they don't do healing. They just are like libraries or computers. They retain information and you can use them as an oracle based on the information they carry. So they can also create these instantaneous healings and that type of work as well.
Yes, and you know, they're more than that, though, Natalie, because they expand and magnify energy. Not only are they storehouses of information, but they are amplifiers, they are receivers, they are magnifiers. in having crystal skull meditations, I do this once a month on the fourth Thursday of every month. I create a crystal grid. People come to have an experience in a meditation, much like you did when you came. An interesting thing that happens is that because I am doing this once a month at the same time, same place, those crystal skulls have gathered energy. They are activating each other. They are activating us. And because we keep coming back, it is amplifying what is taking place there month after month. It creates a vortex of energy that we're connected into. There's much more that goes on than just...
Yes, I've experienced that. It's powerful when you create a crystal grid and repeat and continuously go back to the same place to pray and to meditate and to do this kind of work. And it does, it creates a sort of portal where the energy is just magnified and it stays like a permanent portal in that location. Because the spiritual center that I used to attend had a crystal, what they call a crystal fire. And we had the same, like a similar crystal grid, and it creates that vortex of energy, and a lot of phenomenon would happen in this space because we did it for years in the same place at the same time. It's incredible what you can create, but more so with the skulls that have another added dimension to
it. What you just shared is exactly what takes place at sacred sites around the world. You know, that is what is creating that site, making it sacred, is the amplification of all the prayer and intention and energy that has been imbued and focused in that direction. So it comes alive. And when I take people on these sacred journeys around the world, we're plugging into that kind of energy, into the sacred presence of place. And we become, excuse my voice, these allergies are really hindering my voice. So we become the ancient ones, the ones that will become before the ones that are to come. So when we visit these ancient sacred sites, we're plugging in to what was left and imbued in the stones from the ones that came before us. And we are doing the same for the ones that will come after us. And also, when you think about it, during this COVID, as our Mother Earth has had time to rest, there's so much beauty and power in this symbiotic exchange of energy, what we give to her and she gives to us. We breathe the Mother as the Mother breathes us. And as the Mother has had this opportunity to rest, all of the sacred sites around the world are pristine and clean and clear. And we will be the ones that will imbue her with the new consciousness and the new energies of what is to come. Our prayers will be like fresh manna upon her. So taking crystal skulls to sacred sites is a really powerful thing to do, which also brings me to an important part of, if your listeners are thinking of working with crystal skulls, the most important thing they can do is to activate the crystal skull.
And how do they do that?
There are several ways, and crystal skulls love sound. They love light and color. They like to be used. They don't want to be sitting on a shelf looking pretty. They want to be handled. They like to be with people and other skulls. They like to be in ceremony. They like to be taken to sacred sites. They like being activated by moonlight and sunlight to be washed, put into fresh, live, living water. There are a lot of ways to activate your crystal skulls. Taking them to group meditation is another one.
Those are a few of the things. Kind of like your pet rock. I feel like if you treat it like a pet rock.
Another way.
You take it everywhere with you.
Yeah, it's funny, but true. It is true. They become like friends. They truly do. They open doorways. You will meet. The most extraordinary things happen when you're involved in the world of crystal skulls. I have met investigative mythologists, scientists, shaman and medicine people of the highest caliber, and doors have opened that have taken me on journeys that I never would have had the opportunity to experience had I not been involved with the crystal skulls. And crystal skulls will choose you to work with them based on your vibration. You're attracted to it, but it is attracted to you. It will choose you because it knows you will know how to activate it and use it. So that's what I...
You told me, actually, now that you say that, you told me to remind you in the beginning
of
the show.
That's exactly part of it. And also the other part is that you've worked with them in other lifetimes. That's why you have an attraction to them.
Now, why do they disappear? Because they like to do that, right?
I just thought of one more way to activate crystal skulls that's really important and powerful that I'd like to go back to. And that is photography. Photographs of ancient crystal skulls. Because all photography has an energetic imprint. And it carries that energetic imprint and vibration. So I have photographs of all the ancient crystal skulls, and I will often use those photographs in my circles to bring the energy of the ancient ones more presently into my grid. But also I'll set a photograph on my altar and put a crystal skull on top of it so that there can be that cross communication as well. So that's another way to activate crystal skulls.
Does it matter if it's a regular camera, like a regular, not an iPhone, you know, digital picture versus
pictures off the internet and use those.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anything.
I did it on photographic paper, which made it nice.
Got it. Great. So they're disappearing.
The disappearing act. Oh my gosh. Can I tell you a story about that? I don't know if I shared this story when you came to that.
I think you did.
I reluctantly share this story because I don't know if people would really believe me. But I am finding in this day and age with people waking up more and more, they do. So I will tell you a story about a trip to Chaco Canyon that I took with two other soul sisters. We're all crystal skull keepers, and we do our work together with our crystal skulls. Leah comes from Ireland originally, and she resides in Australia. And she and I have taken groups to the pyramids in Mexico and working with the crystal skulls in Mexico as well. But anyway, we go to Chaco Canyon, and we have 3 days of camping and ceremony doing our work with the skulls. And after 3 days, I'm pretty spent. I've just about saturated, and we had one more place we were going to visit. We had heard that it was a galactic kiva. Prior to going to that kiva, earlier in the morning, we were directly across the canyon at another site where we had discovered in the canyon wall what I would call a shaman's chair. People had slid into that space so many times, the surface of the stone and the ground around it was shiny smooth. And not only was this chair naturally built into the side of the cliff, there was a crack that ran straight up the canyon wall all the way up to the top of the mesa. And in Native tradition, a crack between the wall and a crack in a rock face is a crack between the worlds. We left that early morning site to go to this last site, the kiva, the galactic kiva. And when we got out of the car, there were no other cars in the parking lot. There were no people around. And this kiva was big. It's almost the size of a small football field, I would say. It was big.
And explain to the listeners what a kiva is.
It would be an underground ceremonial circle, a ceremonial space. They had roofs on them back then. Timber roofs is what they believe, but now they're just open kind of pits. They were used for ceremony. That's all we know, really. And we arrived to the kiva, and Leah has two crystal skulls that are life size, I would say. Probably, well, I don't know how many pounds, but they were big size crystal skulls, full size crystal skulls, and I had a small one. And she said, walk the kiva three times. Walk around the kiva three times. And to be honest, I was at the end of this 3 days of ceremony, and I felt like the last thing I wanted to do was walk around this kiva three times. And I certainly wasn't going to follow Leah. So I went off in an opposite direction to Leah. She walked one way, I walked the other way. So what we had inadvertently done was walk in a spiral, where she was walking around the kiva one way and I the other way, and we passed each other three times. And I was so glad that she said, walk the kiva three times, because it helped me connect in with the mother. My feet, my consciousness, my body, everything with every step became more and more connected. So you lose a sense of time and space. You're the only ones there. She stood at the north end. I stood at the south end. We put our crystal skulls down on Mother Earth and proceeded to do our individual ceremonies. After some time we had completed, I walked back up to Leah. I saw that she hadn't finished what she was doing. And she is a sacred songstress, so she was singing and she was dancing using her arms in spiral motions with her two crystal skulls in front of her on Mother Earth. I walked a little further on, there was a wall. It was about a 5-foot wall in height. And I stood behind the wall and I looked across the canyon and I saw how this kiva lined up perfectly with the shaman chair where we had been earlier that day. And I could see how the crack between the worlds ran direct in alignment with this kiva. Leah then came around the wall and asked me to do a little energetic work on her, which I did for probably 10-15 minutes. And then we were talking about our ceremony, and we walked back around the wall. She said, I need to get my skulls, my crystal skulls. And when we came around the corner of that wall, they were not there. They had dematerialized. They had gone into another dimension, gone into a void. I heard dematerialized, and they were gone. And that was astonishing. It was mind-blowing and couldn't really make sense of it. And in my humanness, all I could think about was the one person who had walked by earlier. I could see this little speck of a person up high on a trail up the side of the mountain from where the kiva was. And I just took off and I started running up that trail as fast as I could run, which is a crazy thing to do, I know. And I felt really silly when I actually approached this man and he turned around startled. And he was wearing shorts, carrying a bottle of water. No backpack, no bulging pockets, you know. And I just said, he turned around and said, what? And I said, did you see two crystal skulls down there? And he said, yeah. And I said, oh, I was just checking. Okay, bye. You know, I just felt so silly and ridiculous. I couldn't even finish my sentence because I just couldn't wrap my head around what had happened. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't, right? There's no explanation for what happened.
I have heard other stories of crystal skulls disappearing and then they turn up somewhere else. And I knew that these two crystal skulls, their work was done. I heard their work was done. And that is often the case with stones and crystals. When their work is done, they'll break. I don't know if you've ever had a crystal break.
Yes. Yes, when they're done, they disappear, they'll break. Usually they'll break. I've had two crystal skulls, small ones, that have disappeared on me. And I, for the life of me, I can't hold on to these things. These crystals are always, especially if they're a little bit smaller. And I don't know. I've never lost any other crystals of mine. So yeah, it's incredible. Now, have you seen a crystal skull glow? Because I know that's another phenomenon that I've heard happen.
I have not.
With them.
Not that it doesn't happen, okay. But I haven't.
Yeah, I always wondered. I think they said that the Mitchell Hedges, I think, was known for glowing sometimes. I don't know. I think I saw it in a documentary.
I know it's interesting. The British Museum crystal skull, which is an ancient one, they had to take it off the display floor because the guards at night were totally creeped out by it because it was turning in the case. And they would come in and turn to another position. And they just couldn't handle it. So they took it off the floor for quite a few years. It's back on the floor now.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. I also learned that Max, the crystal skull Max, that the keeper of Max, she has to put it away in the closet because it's constantly talking to her.
Joanna Parks, yeah. I've had the good fortune of being with many of the ancient crystal skulls, mainly, I think, because we live in Arizona and Phoenix. It attracts a lot, and we have several that live here. And I work out of a store called Storm Wisdom, and we have hosted Joanna Parks and Max, Carolyn Ford and Einstein, Kirby with Shauna Ra, and of course I have hosted the Mitchell Hedges recently there, and it's been fun.
Now, you mentioned earlier the new consciousness. The Native American, one of the Native American legends of the skulls is that when the 13th, so supposedly the 13th is, no one knows where it is, right? And when the 13th shows up, then it's supposed to, something's supposed to happen when all 13 are brought together.
There is that legend that when the 13 come together, we enter the Age of Enlightenment, the Golden Age. Some believe that we humans are actually the 13th. And symbolically, another, you know, symbol of crystal skulls is that they are considered in some cultures the, let's see, what do they say about the, they represent the transformation of ego. Mm. So you have this clear crystal consciousness.
Fascinating. Such good stuff. Have you received anything from the skulls intuitively about 2020?
Not about 2020. No, sorry.
Just curious since we're here. They shed any light.
I think everybody's on their own journey in this 2020.
How does one become a crystal skull keeper?
Well, I think, you know, we started to cover that with, you know, you finding the skull or the skull finding you, and activating it is the first step in becoming a crystal skull keeper. But becoming a crystal skull keeper, once you find your skull, it will lead you on the most extraordinary journeys. As I said, you know, it opened my world to meeting the most extraordinary people. I've experienced the paranormal time and time again.
Do you have any other stories of paranormal or healing that are favorites?
You know, the other thing that I have found with the crystal skulls, when you start working with them, your sixth sense will become more activated. Your psychic abilities will be more activated. I was invited to go to Mount Shasta to work with the crystal skulls and to join my friend Leah again up there. And at that time, I just didn't have the extra cash to go to Mount Shasta for a crystal skull gathering. And I said to Leah, I don't think I can make Mount Shasta. And within a week, I had a check in the mail from a woman I hadn't spoken to in months who said to me, "Stephanie, I know you're going to be leading the meditation in Chicago for Celebrate Your Life, and I just wanted you to have this money to spend any way your heart desires while you're there." And it was the exact amount of money I needed for my airfare for Mount Shasta and for my accommodation. And that came a week after I had said to Leah, "I don't think I can go." These kind of things happen when you're involved with the Crystal Skulls. When I was in Mount Shasta, we had a ceremony at Medicine Lake, which is a little ways north out of Mount Shasta. It was the spring equinox, and there was snow on the ground, even up there at that time. I'm saying even, I think of spring in the desert, we don't have snow, but there was snow up there. We created a fire. We were four women with our crystal skulls in ceremony. And we sat and we sang and we told stories and we did our ceremony with the crystal skulls. And when we stood up to leave that fire ceremony, we all faced Medicine Lake and we looked up into the sky and there were two moons in the sky. And Jill said to me, "I see two moons in the sky." And I looked over my shoulder to Leah in astonishment and said, "There are two moons in the sky." And she looked at me and we all kind of went, "Ah," and looked up and it was gone. It was a magical moment. It's a moment I won't forget. And I believe that when we are in ceremony and we're working with the skulls, these moments of magic almost become everyday experiences. The next day, I went to the landlord of the guest house we were staying at, and I asked to borrow a book of hers that she had read from the previous day. And when I opened it up, the first page read, "In the times of Lemuria, when there were two moons in the sky."
Stop it. Wow.
I have lots of stories.
I love it.
Oh my gosh. In the times of Lemuria, when there were two moons in the sky, I did not know about that. That's awesome.
It's called The Star Sun Oracle. It's out of print, but it's a beautiful book that was written from the ones from the stars.
I'm going to check that out. Is it about Lemuria?
It's a card set. It's a deck of cards and it has the little book to go with it. Mm-hmm. But it gets a little preface first. And it was in there.
Oh, interesting. So cool. There's so much magic and mystery to the world and especially crystal skulls. It's so fascinating. And I'd love to see what they do for everyone. And I hope they pique people's interest and they start befriending them. Can a person do scrying with the skulls as a service, as an intuitive, like psychic
Absolutely.
Service?
Absolutely. If that's something you feel called to drawn to, they're known for that. So, you know, it depends how you want to use them. I use them in my healing practice where often I will have a crystal skull at the head of a person and another at the foot of the person. And when I look at the energy, it presents itself as a figure of eight. So the energy is flowing in that direction when I'm working on someone. Or I may find that just placing them in their hands after the session or before the session, I really let them guide me how they want to be used. So for me, because my passion is my healing practice, and my sacred travel, but my healing sessions are my passion, and I often bring my crystal skulls into those. So if you're called to work with them with scrying, that is what you'll do. Everybody's different.
Now with COVID, how's your healing practice going? Are you doing things online or are you just doing proper safety protocols?
I have temporarily suspended the gatherings, but I am doing online sessions.
Are you doing the crystal skull circles events online?
Maybe I should start. Maybe you're sparking me to do that.
I think so.
Maybe it's time to do that. And maybe it's time for me to get started again.
It's so funny. I accidentally ended up on an episode of Ancient Aliens.
So, tell me about that.
But I had no idea. It's nothing out of this world, but it's just funny because I love Ancient Aliens and I had no idea until 3 years later. So I was at the 12/21/12 Crystal Skull reunion they had at the Miami Circle in that ancient site that they found in Brickell. And I was there attending the ceremony. And then 3 years later, I don't remember seeing cameras. 3 years later, my friend's husband recognizes me in the crowd on the episode of Ancient Aliens. And I was just like, what? What do you mean? And I, sure enough, I pulled up the episode on YouTube and there I was standing in the crowd. And I was like, yes. It was just, oh yeah, baby steps. Hopefully one day I can actually speak on the episode. But that was my 2 seconds
what
of
you're
fame.
Doing. You'll get there.
So this has been wonderful. So how can people work with you if they want to work with you or the skulls or all of the above?
You can find me on my website, which is simply my name, Stephanie, Stephanie Phelps, Phelps. And just remember Michael Phelps, the Olympic swimmer, to remember my last name. So you've got stephaniephelps.com. And from my website, you can actually connect to my Instagram page or Facebook. My Facebook page is Stephanie Phelps, White Horse Journeys. White Horse Journeys is the name of my company. And one of the things that I'd like to share is I do have a Sedona retreat scheduled for September 2021. Hopefully by then COVID will settle down and we can get out, and they will be 4 days out on the land under the stars. The full moon will include Sweat Lodge, Natalie, which will be optional. And a lot of sacred earth practices from an indigenous perspective. We'll be connecting with the stone people. We'll be going to sacred sites, and it will be a magical time to connect with the vortex energy.
That sounds amazing. I love Sedona so much. I miss it. That is, my soul just melts as soon as I drive in to just like the area. Just getting off the highway, I'm already usually like crying and moving through stuff. And it's just so magical. And the last time I was actually in Sedona, randomly enough, I took my crystal skull because my friend had gotten me a beautiful skull at the Crystal and Gem Show in Tucson because they have such great deals there. And I was able to get a big one. And then I took it with me and it was in photo shoots with me as my pal. it's just such a great place. So yeah, that it is. So I love that. Sounds like such a wonderful experience you have. And my birthday's in September. So let's see if I can make this happen.
Well, I have a little bit about it on my website, so you can check it out. See if it's something that you would be able to do. Gosh, you're talking about the gym show.
Yes.
Makes me think of another story about my very first crystal skull.
Okay, sure, let's go.
Because, do this whole thing. Know, this whole thing about crystal skulls being weird and creepy, you know, a lot of people feel that way because of all the negative connotations with the crystal skulls. And
yeah, I think sometimes I just feel like also it like reminds them of death because it's a skull.
Dying, poison, and pirates, you know, all negative connotations. So it's not a wonder people have an aversion to like cults, you know, all of the above. Anyway, side note, I believe that a lot of times when the crystal skulls call you, you'll be gifted crystal skulls. And most of my skulls have been gifted to me. And my first crystal skulls, the pink oracle that you set with, was gifted to me from a friend who was down at the gym show. And she knew that after I had been with the Mitchell Hedges skull, that I was having visions of a pink quartz crystal skull. And it would come to me so randomly, Natalie. I was walking down the aisle in the supermarket and, you know, going past the pasta sauce, and in comes this technicolored vision of a pink quartz crystal skull. And I was like, whoa, where'd that come from? Then I was up in Sedona at Palaki, and I was in the parking lot, and in comes this pink crystal skull vision, all after I had sat with the Mitchell Hedges. So I felt like, oh my gosh, they must be communicating with me that I need to be with this pink crystal skull. And that set me off to explore who are the ancient keepers of rose quartz skulls. In the meantime, my friend had gone down to the Tucson Rock and Gem Show. She was looking at crystals. She saw a man in the distance pick up a tablecloth and look underneath the table and then look at her and drop the tablecloth down and walked away. So she walked down that aisle, picked up the tablecloth, and under the tablecloth was the rose quartz skull. She picked it up and she said to the little lady behind the table, "How much is this crystal skull?" $100. Spirit gift. She bought that skull and gifted it to me, and that was my first crystal skull, and that's the oracle.
Listen, y'all, this skull is huge. How much does it
weigh? I think it's 7 pounds, 3 ounces.
7 pounds, 3 ounces. I knew it was really heavy. For some reason, I thought it was 9.
I forgot.
It's a huge... $100, you go to a metaphysical store and you get a skull like the size of a quarter. That is amazing. And how I wouldn't, and that man who looked at you looked at the lady, at your friend, and then he walked away.
That also reminds me, you know, of how these crystal skulls call you. When I was up at Mount Shasta, I was receiving messages that I was going to be the keeper of an ancient skull. And I thought, how in the heck could that happen? An ancient skull? Just seemed, I couldn't fathom it. Make a long story short, I did babysit an ancient crystal skull from Mexico that came from Cozumel for about 6 months. So I did get to be a part-time keeper of an ancient crystal skull. They work in magical ways. So cool. That's so what I want to say.
I love it. So when I sat with your pink skull, the rose quartz skull, have a name? The oracle. Okay. So when I sat and meditated with the oracle, what I received is that she said that I would be a skull keeper. And I just kind of sat with that. I've never said this to anyone because I almost feel weird. I do. I feel very weird saying this, But yeah, that's what the oracle told me, that at some point, I guess, in my life, it's going to become a thing. And I stayed fascinated with skulls after that and more connected.
You know,
so I'm excited to see.
I call them the talking heads.
Yep.
And accurate. The message you received, you are already a keeper of a crystal skull, and more are coming.
So good. Oh, so this has been great.
Thank you.
So much good information. And thank you for your time, for being a guest on the show and sharing all your wisdom about crystal skulls. Like, you've got tons more wisdom about many more things. I'm sure we'll meet again and have you on the show. I'd love to have you back on the show to talk about the other things that you're passionate about. All right, guys, it's a wrap.